Can you believe that the laws of agricultural tithe-like commandments even reach into the kitchen? Numbers 15, verses 17 through 21 speak of tithing the first of the dough. The Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Speak to the people of Israel and say to them, when you come into the land to which I bring you, and when you eat of the bread of the land, you shall present a contribution to the Lord. Of the first of your dough you shall present a loaf as a contribution. Like a contribution from the threshing floor, so shall you present it. Some of the first of your dough you shall give to the Lord as a contribution throughout your generations." A portion of the first of the dough from each year's crops was to be made into a loaf and given to the priests for consumption. Thus, even the non-farmer would be offering up a sort of first fruits. This mitzvah was considered so important that its performance is said by the prophet Ezekiel in 44:30 to cause a blessing to rest on your house. The portion of the dough for the priests was called challah, a word that means portion. And the mitzvah was called the separation of challah. Let me read you the explanation from Torah Club. Every batch of dough made within the land of Israel is subject to the law of challah. A challah is a cake of bread. The Torah states that a challah of dough is to be separated out from each batch as a type of truma for the priesthood. In terms of sanctity, it is to be treated as the truma of the threshing floor. This means that it was sacrosanct to the priesthood and their families and could be eaten only in a state of ritual purity. The Torah does not prescribe how large the portion of challah removed from the batch of bread should be. Like the corner of the field, the measure is left unspecified. The rabbis, however, determined minimums. According to rabbinic law, a batch of dough must be at least an omer of flour, about 3 quarts, to be subject to the law of challah. The size of the portion must be at least 1/24 of the total batch. A baker is allowed to make it only 1/48 of the total batch. Torah Club continues. In the Torah, the commandment is specifically limited to bread made in the land of Israel. The sages further limit it to dough made from the flour of the 5 grains produced in the land of Israel: wheat, spelt, barley, rye, and oats. However, rabbinic law broadened the command to apply to all lands and every time, lest the principle be forgotten. A challah portion is still set aside by the scrupulously observant today. Because the challah portion separated for the priests is truma, they must eat it in a state of ritual purity. Therefore, the challah set aside from each batch of bread dough has no practical purpose. Even if a Kohen can be found, he and his family are Levitically unclean and will remain so until the ashes of the red heifer ceremony is reinstituted. Therefore, in modern observance, the portion of challah is tossed into the oven and burned up. In Jewish Sabbath tradition, the braided loaves of bread which adorn the Sabbath table are referred to as challah. The name implies bread from which the challah has been taken and burned. Challah bread now refers to the braided Sabbath bread, but it originally meant bread from which the challah portion had been removed. Remember that I said that tithing was only on grain? Well, that is true of the main tithing system, but there are tithe-like commandments that apply to livestock. Like with the first fruits of the harvest, subsequently there is also the Torah requirement to offer up the firstborn, bechor, of animals as well. God tells Aaron and the priests in Numbers 18, verses 15 through 18, "Everything that opens the womb of all flesh, whether man or beast, which they offer to the Lord, shall be yours. Nevertheless, the firstborn of man you shall redeem, and the firstborn of unclean animals you shall redeem. And their redemption price, at a month old, you shall redeem them. You shall fix at 5 shekels in silver, according to the shekel of the sanctuary, which is 20 gerahs. But the firstborn of a cow, or the firstborn of a sheep, or the firstborn of a goat, you shall not redeem. They are holy. You shall sprinkle their blood on the altar, and shall burn their fat as a food offering, with a pleasing aroma to the Lord. But their flesh shall be yours, as the breast that is waved, and as the right thigh are yours." While the firstborn of man is to be redeemed, the firstborn of cattle cannot be, the one exception being unclean animals such as the firstborn donkey, which is redeemed with a lamb. The firstborn animal is offered up on the altar in Jerusalem, and the priest is required to eat its flesh there. If it develops a blemish, it is then not offered up on the altar, but given to the priest nonetheless. Today, without a temple, the firstborn of an animal is usually left to graze by itself until it develops a blemish and is then given to a priest. How about tithing wool? You bet. There's the mitzvah in Deuteronomy 18:4 to give the first fleece of your sheep to the priest. The sages ruled that this should be, again, 1/60th in quantity, and it is still observed today in the land of Israel, where the wool tithe is still given to the priests. Additionally, believe it or not, from every single kosher animal that is slaughtered for food, the priests are to receive portions. Now that's a lot of meat. We read in Deuteronomy 18:3, "And this shall be the priest's due from the people. From those offering a sacrifice, whether an ox or a sheep, they shall give it to the priest, the shoulder and the two cheeks and the stomach." Halakhically, this refers to the upper part of the right foreleg, the jowls along with the tongue, and the fourth stomach known as the maw. There are no issues of ritual purity attached to these parts, so the priest may eat them anywhere himself or sell them if he desires as well. Today, this has been widely interpreted as only applicable within the land of Israel, and it is still observed today where these parts are given to a priest. Lastly, there is an actual Ma'aser Behemah animal tithe mentioned in Leviticus 27, verses 32 through 33. "And every tithe of herds and flocks, every tenth animal of all that pass under the herdsman's staff, shall be holy to the Lord. One shall not differentiate between good or bad, neither shall he make a substitute for it. And if he does substitute for it, then both it and the substitute shall be holy. It shall not be redeemed." This was usually done once a year by leading the animals through a narrow opening through which only one animal could fit at a time. The farmer would then count and mark every tenth animal, thus the selection process would be totally random, and the farmer would not be selecting the best to keep for himself. If the animals were unblemished, then they were offered up as peace offerings on the altar in Jerusalem, and the owner would then eat the flesh there. If they were blemished, they could be eaten anywhere. Naturally, the tithe on animals is not observed today without a temple. While we're on the topic, one last tithe-like commandment is the half-shekel tax. We read about this in Exodus 30, verses 13 through 15. "Each one who is numbered in the census shall give this, half a shekel according to the shekel of the sanctuary. The shekel is 20 gerahs, half a shekel as an offering to the Lord. Everyone who is numbered in the census, from 20 years old and upward, shall give the Lord's offering. The rich shall not give more, and the poor shall not give less than the half shekel, when you give the Lord's offering to make atonement for your lives." This consisted of an annual tax of one half shekel to be paid to the tabernacle and later to the temple to aid in its upkeep. It's actually not really a tithe per se, because it's a fixed amount no matter what one's income for all males to pay from the age of 20 years old and up. It was collected in the month of Adar from all settlements, both in and outside the land of Israel, wherever Jewish people lived, and then it was brought to the temple in Jerusalem. It is also not practiced today without a temple.